Welcome to Giants Double Play, the San Francisco Chronicles podcast on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Janie Hu, the Chronicles assistant sports editor, and I'm joined, as always, by our Giants beat writer, Henry Schulman.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by technology? Do you suffer from a nagging fear of missing out? Join Chronicle Managing Editor Fernando Diaz as he talks to a panel of industry experts about the effects of technology on privacy and ways you can protect yourself. It's Chronicle Chats at Herbst Theater on September 17th. You can purchase tickets at sfchronicle.com/chats.
Hi, Henry. Welcome back to the Bay Area, and thanks for joining us on another episode of Giants Double Play.
How you doing?
Good, good. I apologize to our listeners if I'm sounding a little wheezy today. I don't know why. I'm just having a little hoarseness in the voice.
I bet you didn't know that Wheezy was the little-known eighth dwarf who couldn't get in the movie. It was a union issue, but we don't have to talk about that here.
Sounds good. So you've just wrapped up a series in Los Angeles against the Dodgers, and outside of the straight baseball wins and losses, I think the biggest story to come out of that was a little slappy fight triggered by Yasiel Puig and Nick Hundley, and we received some news from the MLB today.
Yeah, the league has decided to suspend Yasiel Puig for 2 games. And fine him while the Giants, Nick Hundley was not suspended and only got a fine. And I think that reflects the fact that even though Hundley started the whole thing by hollering at Puig and, you know, sort of telling him in a colorful way to get back in the box, Hundley did not lift a hand to Puig. Puig is the one who started the physical part of the altercation. And I think that's what the league's consideration was. Puig smacked at Hundley twice when they were arguing in the batter's box or near the batter's box. And then as the benches emptied, Puig took a shot at Hundley's mask while Hundley was being restrained. And the league did not look kindly upon that. So I think this is something that Giants are going to be happy about and the Dodgers are not, because the punishment was sort of definitely one-sided. And the guy who actually did instigate it, Hundley, it is not getting suspended. I mean, the league generally feels that guys in the heat of battle will, you know, they'll jaw at each other. It happens. But once it gets physical, that's where, you know, sort of the responsibility lies. So, you know, another chapter in Giants Dodgers lore. You had, I'm sure it goes back to long, long before any of us were born. But, you know, you had Marshall taking a bat to Roseboro and Reggie Smith running into the stands at Candlestick to take on a fan, and Bumgarner versus Puig, everybody versus Puig.
Right.
And, you know, it adds a little flavor to this whole rivalry, which has now gone on for more than a century.
Right. You're reaching way back there for some of those examples. Well done. What did you think about just the initial Hundley also getting thrown out when the incident went down? Because I know a lot of Giants fans seem to be upset about that.
Yeah, you know, I think the Giants were upset about it too, but it's really hard to argue against that when he really did start it. And you know, you could argue all you want about the propriety of telling a hitter how to react or not react or whatnot when he's upset because he didn't hit a pitch. But if Hundley had just not said anything and let Puig get in the box, none of it would have happened. Now, the interesting thing is that the umpires, they didn't really give us a great explanation as to why Hundley was ejected. The umpire, Eric Cooper, who did the ejecting, the home plate umpire, he told the pool reporter that it's pretty obvious if you look at the tape as to why Hundley was ejected. And that perplexed all of us because
right,
there was nothing in the tape that showed him doing anything egregious. Bochy and the staff looked at the tape. They couldn't figure out what he was talking about. I believe Dwayne Kuiper said that there may have been a little bit of touching where when they were jawing at each other, Hundley's head made contact with the bill of Puig's helmet, which I guess you could call contact. And maybe that's what Cooper was talking about. But the league obviously didn't see it that way. If they had seen it that way, they might have suspended Hundley too.
Right. What do you think about, or what do you make of Hundley's comments afterwards that this could bring the Giants clubhouse together a little bit?
Yeah, you know, it makes you think that, who knows, that, you know, maybe this was a little bit of premeditation, maybe to fire the Giants up. Now, this is a clubhouse that's a lot better than last year's clubhouse. And, you know, last year's clubhouse had issues with chemistry, and that's going to happen in a 98 loss season. I mean, there were issues with Bochy. We wrote about that, a big story in September, you know, with Bochy and the players. There were players who didn't get along. In all honesty, you know, George Kontos was shipped out because, you know, he apparently was the source for the story about Mark Melancon that got some negative publicity in the middle of the season. There was a lot of stuff going on. This year, I don't sense that there's any chemistry issues, but, you know, sometimes a little argument like that can, you know, maybe rile some guys, get some blood flowing. This is a team that's not been hitting.
Right.
You know, just get people a little even closer, closing that circle in the clubhouse you know, maybe get a little more action on the field, convert it into a little more action on the field as they go into the final 40 games.
Right. So we'll get back into, again, the wins and losses of it. But I just wanted to mention, because I want to get your take on this also, that the league office has been busy today. And they also handed down some other suspensions. This one was from off of last night's game when Miami's Jose Urena drilled Ronald Acuna, who had been, you know, hammering home runs. Apparently, they decided they couldn't get him out and pretty intentionally hit him, hit Acuna on the elbow. Urena was suspended 6 games by the league. What do you think about that?
Well, it's funny. This just happened, the news, and the reaction I'm seeing from baseball people on social media is that Urena got off really easily, because here you have a guy who is endangering the health of one of the great young players in the game. I mean, a rookie of the year candidate, and 6 games for a starter is essentially 1 start, because, you know, I mean, you could even make it no starts if you slip another, like a six starter in there in an off day, and you might not be punished at all. The other funny thing I think about is, I mean, of all the guys to have it to, you know, get throw that pitch, Urena is a guy who never knows where the ball is going. And I think he's made 104 games that he's played in the majors. I think 90 something starts. He's hit 34 batters. Now, I didn't see it, so I don't really know how obvious it was. There probably is a slight possibility he didn't do it on purpose and he was just Urena being Urena. But I think there are a lot of people who believe that he should have gotten a far bigger suspension, because the league is just basically telling him, by missing 1 start, if that, that it's okay to do something like that. And it really isn't if it was intentional. I mean, baseball should not be weaponized. And it's this old school way of, you know, self-discipline and keeping things straight on the field. But as we've seen now with what we know on concussions and broken bones and all that, it really is, it has no place in the game.
Right. That old stick them in the ribs if they're, you know, on a hot streak or something like that. It does seem like baseball, out of all of the sports, has all of these unwritten traditions, and it seems to be hard to get past some of them. Because even now, you have still guys, you know, former players saying, yeah, I would have done that too. And I guess it's kind of concerning, correct? Like you were saying, given all the...
Yeah. I don't know if Mattingly ordered it. You know, Mattingly is definitely an old school guy, but you know, as you see more and more younger managers coming into the game, I think you'll see less and less of that, because I think they understand that the old rules really shouldn't apply. I mean, even Bochy talking about Puig the other day, he said the game has changed. You know, I mean, even when Bochy played Major League Baseball, back then it would have been quite normal to go after Puig for some of the antics that he does now, but it's a different game now. And Bochy actually said he just doesn't let that stuff bother him anymore. And even an old school manager like Dusty Baker once told us that he just absolutely hates it when a pitcher drills a player just because that player's had success against your team. You know, it's not his fault he's destroying you. It's the fault of your own pitchers that he's destroying you. And, you know, you clean your own house first and don't worry about the other guy. And I think, like anything else, as the game progresses and more old timers are pushed out of the game and replaced by newer, younger managers, I think you'll see less and less of this. And the unwritten rule book will be, you know, thrown into the unwritten garbage can.
Right. And to be fair, I know we're chatting about this right now as take it for gospel, or I give that impression that there was intent in terms of hitting Acuña. But even just to your point about Mattingly, after the game, he did tell reporters saying, "I don't want to see this kid get hit. He's going to be a great player for a long time. He's beat us up, but this is not the way you want to handle that situation."
Well, you know, there are times when pitchers will go rogue and do it on their own, or you'll have some veteran players or maybe not even veteran players kind of tell a pitcher, especially a younger pitcher, "Look, this is what you have to do. This is what you have to do," because that's what happens when, you know, a guy is crowding the box like that. And it is possible that something happened without Mattingly's knowledge. Now, I know for a fact that with the Giants, Bochy does not let pitchers decide when to hit guys. If somebody's going to get hit for some infraction, it's going to be Bochy making that decision. Mm-hmm. And it's usually not going to be for a guy performing well against the Giants. It's going to be retaliation for something that happened on the field.
Right.
So, every manager is different. Every clubhouse is different. And I mean, even with a veteran pitcher like Bumgarner or a guy like Cueto, Samardzija, or whatever, Bochy would not cotton to one of those guys just sort of taking the law into his own hands.
Right, right. So again, after all of this kind of little brouhaha on the field stuff, the reality of the situation, the Giants went down to Los Angeles, took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. In normal circumstances, you'd think, hey, they won the series, but they really, really could have used a sweep given where the division standings are and how they've just kind of not been able to separate off of that 500 line, correct?
Yeah, I mean, if this were a series were in May, not only would you say it was great that they won the series, but you'd also say, like, look, they almost won the last game and they were down 3-0. But, you know, the reality is that this is a team that's still in the clubhouse and in the manager's office and probably in the front office as well, still feels it has a shot to reach the playoffs. And the Giants, unfortunately for themselves, have put themselves in the kind of hole where winning 2 out of 3 is just not always going to be helpful, because they don't have a lot of games left against the teams ahead of them. I think we talked about this on an earlier podcast. The Giants are done with the Dodgers until the final weekend of the season. They have 3 games left with Arizona, which is the first place team now, and that's coming at the end of the month. And they have 6 games against the Rockies, who are ahead of them. And, you know, 3 of those are at Coors Field, where the Giants just absolutely can't win. So, I mean, they really, really need help from other teams. It's like a sliding scale. The more you win, the less help you need,
right,
and vice versa. And they've put themselves in a position where they just need a ton of help from other teams. They need, Derek Holland said it best last night after the game at Dodger Stadium, that we really just have to hope that those 3 teams ahead of us just beat the heck out of each other, and then we get on a winning streak and start rolling. But, you know, they've played 122 games now. That big winning streak really hasn't happened. They had one stretch where I think they won 9 of 12 somewhere earlier in the season, some number like that. And they need to do that again, and maybe even more, to put themselves in a playoff position. It really does look like if they're going to get to the playoffs, it's going to have to be through the division and not the wild card. A big, big 2 series coming up in Cincinnati and New York. I mean, Cincinnati is playing awfully good baseball now. They're not the pushovers they were before they fired the manager, Brian Price, and replaced him with Jim Riggleman. They're 49-54 under Riggleman, which is really a vast improvement over where they were. And then they go to New York, where the Mets are a mess all the way around. And I mean, it's not, you know, 5-2 would ordinarily be a fantastic road trip, but, you know, looking at it realistically, you know, 6-1, that's something that they really kind of need to shoot for.
Right, right. We spent a lot of this season, I feel like, and particularly after June, talking about how the pitching has actually been really good and their offense has been failing them. What can they take, though, from the fact that they rallied late in these last 3 games?
Well, I mean, I mean, it's positive development that they were able to win in the ninth inning, and, you know, had that 3-run homer by McCutchen in the eighth.
Right.
But the problem is that, I mean, if you're going to win the division, you really need to have consistent offense. You can't make the pitchers throw shutouts every night out there. And what you had in the Wednesday night game at Dodger Stadium is you had your 3, 4, and 5 hitters, Evan Longoria, Buster Posey, and Gorkys Hernandez, go 0 for 15. And stuff like that, maybe not to that degree, but stuff like that happens a lot with this offense. And they're relying on, you know, a big hit or two here or there. They're relying on role players and rookies and whatnot. But you need the guys, you know, the guys who brung you, as they like to say, you know, you need your veteran core guys to go out there and produce. And the Giants are not doing that. They have that assorted game where they'll score 7 or 8 runs, and then they'll go another 10 days where every game is 2 or 3 runs. And, you know, they have to rely on the pitching staff to just completely shut down the other side. And that's putting too much pressure on the pitching staff. It's putting too much pressure on the bullpen, where the relievers are just throwing way too many innings. And, you know, right now they don't really have a reliable person to pitch the eighth. They may get one back with Hunter Strickland. And I don't know, you know, if he's necessarily going to pitch the eighth, but you got to take some pressure off the pitching staff and the bullpen in particular by winning a few games by 5 or 6 runs.
Right, right. Absolutely. On that note, in terms of inconsistent offense, I'm going to bring up the story. You just wrote this great story on Joe Panik. And really, the question that you're asking is, what happened to Joe Panik? Here's the guy that, you know, made some very big noise when the season started, and hitting two home runs being the difference in their season opening wins against the Dodgers. And you turn that around and you look at this 3-game series, and he had 1 at bat. And you said this, to be fair, he would have had a second one had the guy in front of him hit. But what can you go into detail about the struggle that he's having this year, coming back from the injuries that set him back in the middle of the season?
Well, yeah, I mean, and first of all, you really have to go back before the injuries. I mean, he had a hot start. He hit the 2 homers at Dodger Stadium the first 2 games of the season. They win the 1-0 games. But, you know, at the same time, he also, you know, he started to decline a little bit. And the big thing, and I talk about it in the story, and you get his thoughts on it as well. He really started to decline against left-handed pitching, and that really had not been a problem for Panik in his career. His numbers were actually slightly better against left-handers average wise. Now, power wise, he was better against righties, but you know, he was always a pretty good hitter against lefties, and mm-hmm. he just stopped hitting against lefties. I mean, he has an average in the 160s against them. So even before he got hurt, he was struggling for one reason or another, and he was trying to work on getting the swing back that had gotten him to the position where they decided he would be the leadoff hitter. And the injuries don't help. He missed about a quarter of the season, really, with the 2 injuries that he had. He wouldn't use that as an excuse. He feels that, you know, once you do your rehab games, if you tell the manager and the coaching staff and the front office that you're ready to go, you should be ready to hit the ground running and hit the way you're supposed to hit. But there's no question that having sort of a stop-start season is going to have an impact in your ability to get into an offensive rhythm. And right now, he's only getting a chance to play against right-handed pitchers. He's in a straight platoon. And, you know, Panik, without giving everything away from the story, has his thoughts on that. You know, being a platoon player, really for the first time in his life, because he never had to deal with this. Not in high school, not in Little League, not in college. He struggled a little toward the end of 2016, and he got, you know, a few more games off than he normally would against left-handed pitchers, but it was not a straight platoon. And right now, Bochy says flat out it's a straight platoon. And, you know, it calls into question what the future is for Panik with this organization. He's getting more expensive. He's a couple of years away from free agency. They may choose to upgrade that position offensively. You don't know, as they need to try and fix this offense once and for all this winter. So I think we're going into an unsettling time with a guy who was, a rookie in just 2014, helping win a World Series.
You mentioned this earlier. in terms of the Giants searching for an eighth inning setup guy. Hunter Strickland is due to come off the disabled list this weekend as the Giants head to Cincinnati and New York. Do you envision him trying to fill, or Bruce Bochy putting him in that position to fulfill that setup role and leave Will Smith as the closer?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, the Giants really have had more trouble in the eighth inning than they have in any other inning. Will Smith has done a tremendous job as the closer since he took over. He's has 10 saves, and really, in fact, the last Giants left-hander to have that many saves in a single season was Dave Righetti, and that was way back in 1991. So I don't think Bochy feels any need to supplant Smith as the closer. I think initially Bochy might reintroduce Strickland in the sixth and seventh inning, but I think ultimately they're going to try and get him into the eighth inning where, I mean, you know, Tony Watson has not been pitched as well as he did earlier in the season. Sam Dyson has his ups and downs. Mark Melanson, I don't know that they trust him necessarily to pitch a lot of the eighth innings. He did have a big strikeout of Manny Machado in the 10th inning last night, which temporarily saved that game. And Maranta as well, he's on a pace to throw about 75 games. They've used him a lot, and he has this propensity, too, to walk the leadoff hitter, and that's not a good way to go about the eighth inning when you have a small lead. So I think they're going to be looking to Strickland as the kind of guy who maybe can get in there in the eighth inning and be that bridge to get the ball to Smith and save these ball games.
How do you think Strickland's going to handle that, kind of coming back in that role, potentially?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he'll handle it okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has to know that this was his own doing, that he lost the job. He lost the job because he punched a door.
Right.
And he doesn't really, I think he's matured enough, despite that, I think he's matured enough to understand that he really has no say in where he's going to pitch. And I think he has to humbly accept whatever Bochy and the pitching coaches decide. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that he would make waves about not pitching the ninth inning after this long absence that he caused with his own indiscretion.
Right, right. Put some of that kind of maturity to the test. How about Jeff Samardzija? What's his status?
Well, Jeff is going to throw to hitters again in Cincinnati, I believe tomorrow, Friday. And if all goes well with that, he may start a rehab assignment the following week. Now, the Giants have a lot of reasons that they want to see Samardzija back in the rotation this year. I mean, for one thing, they want to see what they have in him when he's completely healthy. They want other teams to see what he has when he's completely healthy in case they decide to try to trade him. He's untradeable now with 2 years left on his contract after this year at probably $36-37 million. So he's got to prove to them, he's got to prove to other teams and to himself that he can still pitch. And frankly, you know, they need what Jeff Samardzija can bring when he's healthy, which is a lot of innings. And I don't see him returning before September 1st, just looking at the timing of it. This is one of those things where they may extend his rehab assignment, both to let his pitch count grow, but also so they don't have to make any undesirable roster moves before they can expand in September. So I think that's one reason not to rush him. If he does okay on Friday throwing to hitters, then you could imagine maybe on the following Monday or Tuesday he would make the first rehab start, and then maybe he makes another one, and that takes him almost to the end of August. Then he can come back, probably not in Coors Field right at the start of the month.
That would be a tough one, huh?
Yeah, maybe in Milwaukee after that.
Right. Okay. I just want to let our readers know as well that you are skipping the next trip to Cincinnati and New York. We'll have John Shea out there for all of our San Francisco Giants coverage.
Yeah, yay, John.
You got plans on the week off, quote-unquote week off?
Yeah, believe it or not, I got jury duty coming up. So you may lose me if it's a big trial. You may lose me to the 2019 season.
Oh, boy. All right, Henry, thanks for joining us again today. We will catch up with you when the Giants are back home and welcoming the Texas Rangers to AT&T Park in a week.
Okay, you got it.
Thanks, Henry. This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Our theme music is Horns of Jericho by Lucas Pern and Miloslav Kolar, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. This show is produced by me and King Kaufman. For more Giants coverage, you can follow Henry on Twitter at Hank Schulman and me at Janie_Hu. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com. If you like this show, we'd love it if you give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Susan Slusser, Oakland A's beat writer for The Chronicle, and I'd love it if you'd listen to my podcast, A's Plus. I talk to players, coaches, executives, and others around the team. Every week you'll get on-field analysis and off-the-field insight. Do you know which A's player lost 20 pounds on a diet of donuts? You would if you'd been listening to A's Plus. Join me every week, wherever you get your podcasts. A's Plus.